Hey there, and welcome to the Waking Up Human podcast. I am your host, Mandy Trapp, and I'm so excited today to be bringing each and every one of you into this most valuable and I also will say inspiring conversation with none other than Cameron Harold. So if you don't know Cameron, let me tell you a little bit about him. Cameron is a top-rated international speaker in over 26 countries, and he is regularly paid to teach at high-end events organized by none other than Fortune, Forbes, and Amex. In fact, Richard Carlgaard, the former publisher of Forbes, calls Cameron the best speaker I have ever heard. He has authored 7 business books, including the global bestseller Double Double, which is now in its 8th printing. Cameron is the founder of the COO Alliance, the world's leading COO training network, which is serving over 250 of the world's most high-impact business leaders. And Cameron is the former COO of 1-800-GOT-JUNK. And in his 6 years with the company, he had taken it from $2 million to, get this, you guys, $106 million. And perhaps for me, more impressively, he grew it into the number 2 most desirable workplaces in Canada. And he did this because he's smart, he thinks outside of the box, and as a near and dear friend to both mine and my husband John's, he's just a really, really good guy. So I'm really excited for you to listen in on a little bit of the conversation that, yeah, you know, we would typically have somewhere around a bottle of wine or around a campfire. But it's really important, I think, that you hear this, especially at this time right now. So if you have little ones around you, you might want to put the headphones on or wait till they're asleep. There's a couple of little F-bombs that are probably in here. But I promise you that this episode packs a punch. And so get your notebooks ready, or in the very least, make sure that you check the show notes after, because there's a lot of really valuable links, including to his website. And he's going to mention his Vivid Vision workshop that he has going on in Mind Valley right now. So kick back, turn the radio up, and listen away. Enjoy the show. Good friend Cam Harold, and all of you already heard that beautiful bio right off the bat, but I always say that bios don't actually tell as much about the person as that you have to experience the energy and the love that is them. And I just have to start by saying, as we were just preambling about knowing each other for quite a while now, that it's been a gift for me, Cam, just to watch you from the outside, how you've changed and evolved. And maybe I feel that way too about me slowly pulling people into my weird, interesting spiritual world. But I think it is the opportunity to get to really know and to see people for the truth of who they are, which I know that you have a lot of wisdom from that place. So thank you.
That's crazy that you just said something, because I had never even mentioned it to you or to John, but you are a reason that I got pulled into this kind of crazy spiritual world. And I remember when it was. You and John were visiting our home when I was living in Scottsdale and down in Ahwatukee, and you were sitting out in the backyard one morning at like 7 a.m. and you were both sitting on lawn chairs meditating by yourself, and I was waking up hungover, and I looked outside and I saw you. I'm like, what the fuck are these two flaky people doing? I'm like, and you're also like my really good friends. I'm like, wow, they have this thing going, like, because they were up partying with me just as late, but they have this thing going, and it just, you were normal humans who were doing what I perceived as flaky. And then now I'm off at like Mind Valley in Estonia and, you know, dropping into these events and really kind of trying to tune into this stuff. So yeah, you were there, and you were a very first door for me. That was about 10 years ago.
Oh, I feel grateful for that. Yeah. I think I've always been the weird one. And so I will take that as a thank you. That's a compliment. You are welcome.
No, it was great. It was great. Plus, you also said my friend Cam, and only my closest friends and family call me Cam, because for the last 30 years I've gone as Cameron. So it's nice to hear Cam infrequently. It's nice.
Well, that's going to be my little term of endearment for you then.
Thank you.
Cam, I've always known you as Cam. And, you know, all things aside, and my husband John met you through EO, which is the Entrepreneurs Organization, quite a few years ago. So very tied to business. And I want to speak a little bit about that, because that's important in a moment. But I am grateful that I just got to meet you as Cam from day one. And do you remember I went to Montreal and I surprised John at his hotel room?
Oh my gosh. I totally remember.
And that was a bit of a kind of a sketchy thing.
That was boys. That was boys behaving badly.
That was people behaving very badly. And
yeah, there were women there too.
It was a bit of a weird, odd environment to step into. But from the outside, now from the outside, kind of looking back at that and back to your us being in Scottsdale with you that one weekend, I remember us drinking so much that one night. Do you remember that we actually had them come and give us IVs the next day?
I remember, yes, in Scottsdale, but wow, that Montreal thing, I wasn't sure you guys were going to make it out of that weekend surviving. And that's a huge testament to just being open and honest and vulnerable. I remember even talking to John about it afterwards, and he was real like open and raw and honest too. That was some cool shit.
It was cool shit. And I know, you know, you are married to a beautiful woman now named Ashley. Mm-hmm. Am I right? It's Ashley.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I can't wait to meet Ashley. But this is not your first marriage. And I think even for John and I as well, even though we have been each other's first marriages and the intention is always to be the last, but there's been a lot of iterations of us being together just based on the fact that there's been so many situations, but also so many evolutions of who we are as people.
Yeah.
Right. No, so I love that I got to watch that with you.
I have my ex-wife who I was married to for 10 years. And then I have what I call the sequel, which was my second wife, who you met, Kim. Yeah. And now I have my best wife, which is Ashley. And I never thought I would be that guy who's gotten married. By the way, this is when I met John. I don't know if you can see that picture, but I weighed.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
That's 43 pounds heavier than I weigh today. So talk about an iteration of a human. Yeah, it looks like I ate someone for lunch that day. yeah, I've definitely changed and evolved and grown. And my ex and I, my first wife and I get along very, very well. We text all the time. We talk about our kids. We've co-raised our kids together. That was a really interesting learning chapter for me. My second wife, again, a fantastic learning chapter for me and time for me. That I still hold on to the amazing parts of. And then, you know, my best wife, we've been together for 5 years and it's amazing too. So.
And what a gift to be able to see the purpose and the meaning that all of these relationships have played in your life and to sit in gratitude, because most people can't do that, right? Society tells us to hate the past experiences, right? To not like the person or anything that sits behind us, whether that's a relationship or business or otherwise. Even the self that you just showed in your phone that is 40 some pounds heavier is that we typically go, ugh, you know, thank God I'm not that person anymore.
You know, I had a very interesting kind of role model or situation that I saw that taught me that. And it was Brian, who was the founder of 1-800-GOT-JUNK. He was my best man at my wedding. And I had watched Brian go through intense turmoil for about 5 years trying to leave his marriage and supported him as his best friend. He was my best man at my wedding before I joined him at the company. So we were very, very close personal friends. And I watched him go through this huge, huge emotional turmoil for about 5 years, finally left his wife when she was pregnant, like very pregnant. And people, I was like, people are going to fucking hate you. Like, this is not, but I knew the truth, which was he'd been trying to go for years. And long story short, he wrote a 2-page painted picture or a vivid vision of what his relationship with her was going to look like in 3 years, how they were going to be friends. They would go on vacations together. They would like each other. They'd have each other for dinner. I mean, stuff that if you read it, you're going, dude, you are fucking crazy because that ain't ever going to happen. And he sent it to her and she's like, dude, you are crazy. That ain't ever going to happen. Fast forward about 3 years to the day, they were very good friends. They were going on vacation together. Her new husband helped build his home. They go on vacations. They hang out all the time. They speak highly of each other. But he decided that what we saw in the mass media, what we saw in movies, wasn't going to be his story. And he decided that if I could describe what it would look like and then figure out how to reverse engineer that, I would always be focused on that as what was going to come true. And I would avoid all the other noise. And it did. And it was... my wife and I have written one for our personal life. I've written one for my personal life as me, written one for my company. But I think that's part of how I've learned to evolve is to focus on that and reverse engineer it.
So do you think that he was kind of your first glimpse into what is possible in terms of creating a vision? Or did you have some, do you think he was the first one or was there some sort of other influence before him? Because that's a long time ago to be thinking that way.
Yeah, that was 2003. So we actually learned the concept in 1998. We were both in an EO forum together I was running a private currency company, a barter company. He was running what was called the Rubbish Boys at the time. And we went to a session with EO. It was a lunch in Vancouver, and 120 entrepreneurs were invited. About 16 of us went. And it was a high performance sports psychologist who worked with Olympic athletes on visualization. And he was teaching us how to use visualization in sport and how to bring it into the business world. So that's where we learned the concept of visualization for business. Brian was the first one that I'd seen taking that and using it in their personal life.
Right.
And it was such a powerful example. When I saw it coming true, I was like, whoa, that's crazy shit.
Right. And so why not? I mean, even back then, there was kind of this idea of this separation between business sits over here, personal sits over here. Hmm. But it almost feels foolish in today's day and age to actually see them as separate. It's all one and the same.
Yeah, I started getting exposed to that. So again, around 1998, the first time I was ever exposed to anything around this space was The Celestine Prophecy.
One of my favorite books of all time.
I just reread it for the second time last month. I was in Israel and I saw it in a bookshelf. I actually saw it in Bhutan. I was hiking in Bhutan. I took it from the hotel lobby and I brought it with me. I exchanged a book.
And, I was going to say, I hope you kept some karma.
Yeah. And so then I read it again, but one of my forum mates, Spar Street, introduced me to this idea of quantum mechanics and quantum physics and how energy and there was so much in that I thought, wow, we can take that from the personal world and bring it into business. So I was understanding how to take it from personal into business. Brian took a business concept and brought it into personal. And yeah, I think you're right. I think in today's day and age, it's all meshed together.
It is. So two things about that. Number one, did you know there's a movie?
Of The Celestine Prophecy?
Yes, there is. You and Ashley need to watch it. So it's been around forever. So the cinematics aren't great, but
yeah.
I think for sure it's on Gaia TV. I don't know if you get Gaia TV, but it's on Gaia TV.
Perfect. I'll get it for sure. I just had my Celestine movie. I just had my 19-year-old watch probably one of the cheesiest movies ever, but the Secret. And he called me up. He's like, Dad, it's amazing. I get it. I totally know why you wanting me to watch it now. And I see all these opportunities. My friends and I are going to watch it again together to think about it for our business. I'm like, fuck, oh, cool.
Okay, let's do this. But you know, whether it's The Secret or whether it's that common thread in The Celestine Prophecy, is that it really has us looking for these synchronicities.
Yeah.
Right? And these synchronistic moments that I think when you're in a lower level of consciousness, which is reflective of fear and lack and scarcity, business or personal, we call these synchronicities random. We call them random, we call it a coincidence, and we brush it off.
Right.
But there's all of these beautiful little synchronicities. Now, I know you keep sending me these little synchronicities that you keep having, but maybe you want to share that. And then I would love for you to elaborate on some of the other synchronicities that you've had play out in your life at the right place, right time.
Okay, I'm going to tell you about a synchronicity that just happened this week with one of my coaching clients. And then I'll tell you about the story that you introduced me to that has blown me away for almost 10 years. So yesterday I was coaching a CEO, great guy from Colorado. I've introduced him to an M&A firm. And I said, you know, there's a second firm that I want to introduce you to that you should talk to. He goes, okay, do the intro. And then he's off to this mastermind event called Baby Bathwater. And he's like, I'm a little nervous. I don't know anybody there. So I'm talking to him about it. I'm like, you'll be fine. You'll be good. And I'm glad you got a speaking spot and you'll meet people. Today, so the 24 hours later, I'm speaking to this M&A firm that I want to introduce Tyler to, because this M&A guy is going to speak at my CEO Alliance event next week. And I'm talking to him. I said, oh, by the way, there's this guy I'm going to introduce you to. His name's Tyler. He goes, oh, perfect. That'll be amazing. And then the M&A guy goes, by the way, are you going to be at Baby Bathwater this weekend? I'm like, no, but the guy that I'm going to introduce you to is, and he's like, oh, great. I'm going to be speaking. I'm like, you guys are both speaking at the same event. You don't know each other. Like they're meant to do business together. Right.
Absolutely.
Or be gay lovers or something. I don't know.
be best friends or twin flames or whatever.
Yeah, they're definitely meant to have some relationship. So I was super excited. So I just did a Loom video and introduced the two of them. I'm like, I don't know, but go meet.
Awesome.
So then let's go backwards to 2012, and you and John are down. So 10 years ago, you and John are in Arizona. We're sitting out in my backyard. It's like 11 o'clock at night, 10 o'clock at night. And we were sitting talking and you said, there's a woman behind you. And I kind of look and you go, no, she's not there, but there's like an energy behind you. I think it's your mom. And I'm like, my mom died like 10 years ago. And you said, well, she's telling you that you're going to be okay. And she's watching over you and everything's going to be okay. And you're okay. And she's leaving you dimes. She's putting dimes around to tell you that she's thinking about you. And I'm like, that's cray cray. Thank you, cray cray person who's been out meditating.
I love you, but you're crazy. Okay. Yeah.
This is like the morning that you're meditating. Now I'm going to find dimes everywhere, right? Dude, I find dimes constantly. And I never get pennies, never get nickels, never get quarters. So I find, like, if my wife and I have a fight, I find a dime that day. If she and I are walking somewhere and we're in a good mood, she finds dimes. If we're in an airport, we find dimes. Getting on stage to go to speaking event, I find dimes. And I started sending you photos once in a while because it's like so often.
Yeah.
And last month I'm in Israel and I find like 7 or 8 of these 10 shekel coins on the ground, like all beside each other. I'm like, this is all the time. Well, my dad died two and a half months ago. And my dad was from the US and he was cheaper than my mom. My dad was always very frugal as an entrepreneur. And a couple of days before the funeral service, my sister, who's been also finding dimes, and we laugh about the story because I told her about it. And we used to send photos of the dimes to my dad to say, mom's thinking about us. Mm-hmm. So 2 days before the funeral service, my sister finds a US nickel and she sends me the photo and she goes, oh my God, this is totally dad. Cause she's from Canada. She lives in Toronto, yeah. And she finds a dime up in Sudbury, which is like 4 hours north of Toronto, a US nickel. And my dad was a US citizen. And so we're like, this must be a signal from dad. So yeah, I believe in this stuff. And I don't believe in it because I need to believe, but there's just something weird happening that it just doesn't make any other sense why I'm seeing this stuff other than you're supposed to.
And the moment that we become aware of it, the more that we begin to see it, right?
Yeah.
But it's also all of these little breadcrumbs. I think it's like the Celestine prophecy on the trail. You know, like quickly to that point, I had my own little like breakthrough. I was burnt out at the beginning of December. I hopped a plane to Tulum by myself for 2 weeks. But for the 1 week where I'm writhing in the burnout going, what am I going to do? I need to get away. Within the course of 2 days, I found 3 different, like one pocket had all these Mexican pesos in them. Another one had like coins, had like paper pesos. And then there was one other thing that was like an actual card from when I had been in Cabo like years before that. Mm. And I'm like, where is this stuff coming from? And it's funny because I think most people can get stuck on the where did this come from?
Right. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter at all. All that matters is that there's something that is being initiated in me. It's this spark that's saying, you need to pay attention. And I actually think, and this is what I want to talk to you about, and then we'll come back to the vivid vision after. But, you know, when I was reading a little bit, and I know a lot about you, of course, but reading in your bio, and you had kind of shared this beautiful story about your dad being this fierce entrepreneur and grooming you for entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. And John and I often have a conversation if, in fact, entrepreneurs can be created or if they're born. And there's one little word that most people aren't usually aware of that they use when they talk about entrepreneurship, and they call it entrepreneurial spirit and the spirit of entrepreneurship. And so my belief around that is that this is who we are and this is how we're born. And we're born to see these opportunities. Skills can be honed, but we're born that way. And the being human part means that we don't always fit. And I know for you grew up not fitting. And thank God you had a father who recognized that this was a spiritual quality of you.
Do you see me?
Tell me what you're thinking.
Yeah, you can see me bouncing, right?
I know, you're like, ooh, ooh. So and like, I can't get it out fast enough.
Yeah, so when you're listening right now, like the person who's listening, you can't see me, but I'm literally jumping around in my couch right now. I'm excited and I'm biting my tongue because there's like so many things. I'm like, yes. So, and you don't know this story, like you just, but you're nailing it so much. So I did, this is another synchronicity. Yeah. I was asked to do a talk in Edmonton in 2009. And that was where I met my current wife, Ashley. She was the, I don't know if you've met her. She was doing PR and some work for the Edmonton EO chapter. And she was dating. Hey, babe. Who was your boyfriend in Edmonton? Your boyfriend from Edmonton? Jason Lemertz?
Yes. From EO in Edmonton.
She was dating this guy, Jason, was in Edmonton. I show up as the speaker for the Edmonton 24 event. I walk in and go, oh my God, you're beautiful. She's a sapiosexual. So I was like the smart guy speaking to the chapter. That was the connection. I was married to my first wife. We didn't hook up or anything, but in 2009, we had everybody on Facebook. Anyway, years later, when Kim and I had split up, she was from Arizona, was back in Arizona, saw that I was now single. She had just gotten out of a 7-year marriage or relationship and sent me a note and said, hey, do you want to get together? I lunged at her. She's like, whoa, you are not ready. And she made me wait 5 months before we could go for a drink. So there's one Edmonton connection, but that's not what I was going to tell the story of.
No way.
Edmonton 2009, I was also asked that same year to do a talk for TED. And I did a talk at one of the very first TEDx events for TEDx Edmonton. And it was about an event called Let's Raise Kids as Entrepreneurs was the topic of my talk that's on the main TED website. It's still on TED today. It's had well over 2 million views. And I talked about whether you're groomed as an entrepreneur or whether you can learn to be an entrepreneur. And I said that both have to exist, that you can have the entrepreneurial DNA, right? The entrepreneurial spirit. And I believe that I was born with all these entrepreneurial traits. I have ADD, I'm bipolar, I spot opportunities, I'm opportunistic, I love ideas, I'm like, you know, tenacious, like I have this entrepreneurial traits, and I like money and I like making money in an era where it wasn't cool to be an entrepreneur. Nowadays, being an entrepreneur is so cool and everybody wants to do it. When I was growing up, it wasn't cool. We were vilified and greedy and capitalist. But the second part was my dad was an entrepreneur and both sets of grandparents were entrepreneurs. So they kept giving me the skills and the encouragement to follow my natural entrepreneurial spirit. And they didn't get in the way. They didn't go out and run the lemonade stand for me. They sat in the house and encouraged me, even if it was a 1-hour business or a 12-hour business or a 6-day business, go do it, have fun. And then we talked about it at dinner and they coached me and gave me ideas and I went back out and did it. But they didn't helicopter parent me as I was doing it. But they certainly gave me, and I could tell you about 15 different business ventures I had between the time I was 7 and 18, and about lessons, key lessons that I remember from each of those business ventures that I still use today in business. Mm. So I was given the skills. Where I was really groomed was my dad saying, being an employee is a terrible deal. Mm-hmm. Being an employee, you don't have control of your time. You don't get to work on the stuff you want to. You have to, you know, drive to somebody's, like, he just showed me all the bad sides and then showed me, you know, the risk of being an entrepreneur, but the upside was time and being able to do what I wanted when I wanted and the money would follow.
Yeah. And I think that it well suited all of those natural born gifts and talents that you came in with.
For sure.
That in a sense, society, and it's still doing it today. Right. On kids who are struggling anywhere on the spectrum and whatever the diagnosis is,
yeah.
Is society still saying that that's wrong because it's hard to control you and it's hard to conform you.
There's two parts that are happening that are wrong right now. One is the medical system and the school system saying we should medicate these kids who are too ADD and too all over the place and too excitable and, you know, trying to sell stuff in the school. We should medicate them to make them more like us, mm-hmm. to make them fit in. The second part that I think is really detrimental and it's very new is encouraging everybody to be an entrepreneur when many people do not have the natural entrepreneurial spirit or DNA to succeed. And they would be horrible entrepreneurs. They'd be much better to be an employee. And I think it's very risky to make it so cool that now we're making kids that would be better being a scientist or they'd be better being a technician or be better being a whatever. And we're trying to make them something that they're not. So I think both sides are equally detrimental now.
Yeah. And I think, Cameron, I'd be interested to know what you think about it. I think what has really happened in the world in the last, it feels like forever, but 3 years, I suppose, where so many things were flipped online and people lost their jobs and the majority of business was being run in this way. I definitely saw it in the health and wellness industry, but I think it definitely has arms in every industry where it's trying to really market and sell people on start your own business, develop your freedom, stay working at home, provide for your family. And it is heartbreaking to me to see, especially people who are very talented and gifted healers and helpers and can be of service, who are, and it kind of reminds me of, you know, like the pie maker story, right? In the E-Myth. And E-Myth. It reminds me of the people who are good at something. And then they're convinced that you need to start a business with this as well. And if you do not have, like, I just don't think that those, that that perspective and the capacity to be able to do that is something you can train. It's either in you or it's not in you.
Yeah. The DNA, the spirit side of the tenacity, the natural leadership, the natural enthusiasm, the understanding that momentum creates momentum, the natural charm, the problem solving, the quick thinking, those are DNA things. Mm-hmm. The skills, like the accounting skills, the marketing skills, the hiring skills, the running meeting skills, the strategic planning skills, those are skills that you can learn. But you can have all the skills in the world. If you don't have the DNA to actually make those happen, you won't be successful. And that's sad to watch some people that, you know, really have no business being, and sadly, they're being preyed upon in many ways by, you know, marketers who have been unable to make it on their own, but now they'll teach you how to run your own business because they couldn't run theirs. Like,
you know, I totally agree.
They're great at marketing, but they're not great at running a business.
Yeah. And it's too bad. It's hard to make your way through the noise. I think as people nowadays, and especially me having, you know, one child who's on the verge of graduating, going, I don't really know what I'm going to do. What should I do? And two parents who are entrepreneurs who are saying, do whatever you want. Yeah. And I know that that's not him. I mean, he's incredible at who he is and what he does, but to start a business around that, I just don't think that that's him.
It's interesting. I saw just recently, it dawned on me that my oldest son was probably never meant to be an entrepreneur. And he was the one I was always talking to about it. And my younger son is absolutely hardwired to be an entrepreneur. And I didn't see it because I'd gone through the divorce and had been removed and wasn't as engaged. Mm-hmm. And now I'm like, whoa, the script has been completely flipped. My oldest is more of an artist. He's more into music and more into movies and more into he just sees the world from a very different lens. I'm like, oh, wow, like I didn't get it. And now I'm seeing it. And yeah, it's a really interesting time with that for sure. I think the pendulum's swinging back a little bit from people now recognizing that being an entrepreneur isn't necessarily the be all and the end all, but maybe it's about being more of a freelancer for multiple companies instead of having one job with one company and being there 50 hours a week. Maybe it's doing the stuff that I'm really good at for four companies, but not trying to build a business around it with, you know, employees and, you know, overhead.
Totally. Space and I think that's one of the gifts out of the last couple of years of people being able to figure out what does a hybrid look like.
Yeah.
And in this fractional consulting or service-based kind of a business. I'm seeing it a lot in my industry too. And, you know, it's helpful for me as a small business owner who only has a couple of full-time employees is that then I have, you know, this beautiful marketing girl who works for me, but three other of my good girlfriends who are also doing their things as well. And I think if it's rightfully kind of put together, that it can help to kind of serve that bigger vision.
If I think about like wellness and let's think about like psychological wellness or just happiness or what, you know, whatever, it's hard for a company until they get to maybe 300 or 500 employees to be able to afford to have a full-time onboard person to help the employees with their lives and their personal, but it's almost irresponsible to not find a way to do it. So for these people that are that maybe they don't want to go work for a 5,000 person company, they're more entrepreneurial. Well, they could go work a half day a week for five different companies and make just as much money as if they were full-time at a big company. And now they've got half their lives back to, that's not so much running a business as it is being more adaptable or entrepreneurial, right? And I think if people can wrap their heads around, that's good enough. You don't have to turn this into a company with employees and lots of moving parts and stress. And that's the shit that's hard.
For sure. And I think it's extra hard right now because we're creating new systems in new ways, right? As all of our systems are collapsing, we're being forced to create new medical systems, education systems, you know, economic systems, just even the way that people work. we need to create new systems, and we need to listen to the people who have super active and creative imaginations, you know, like yourself, giving that as an option, because otherwise, you know, people have been so, I think just trained and entrained to think and see things one way, is that they actually only see it as a this or that versus an that is evolved.
Well, and social media is putting so much pressure on people to explain to everyone else around them what they're doing and why they're doing that. And if they're feeling bad that they're not an entrepreneur because entrepreneur is now cool, that's really hurting the fact that they shouldn't be one in the first place. And what they're doing is actually pretty damn cool anyway. Like 30 years ago, if you could have worked for 20 hours a week and got paid full time and worked for 5 pretty cool companies and not have to drive to work and work for shitty bosses and work in some crappy little desk, sounds like bliss to me.
I agree.
But if they're looking at it and saying, no, it's not big enough, or it's not whatever enough, or I don't have a social media, whatever enough, like, who cares? That doesn't matter.
I mean, my bigger question, and then this is where I want to open it up to the Vivid Vision, is for people to begin to consider, so how does this job or whatever it is that I do to serve and to make money, how does this actually feed the greater vision that I have for my life? Yeah. And I think a lot of the criticism that's come against the millennials, you know, and, you know, even my kids who are 17 and 20 right now, you know, not wanting to work as hard as, say, like our parents did, and that they're slackers and that. When I look at my kids, is that they just have a very different perspective of what matters and what's important to them.
Yeah, I think they're smarter. It's a really big sigh of almost relief for that generation to not have to keep up with the Joneses the way that our generation was. And I think you're almost at the very tail end of that generation that really cared about the house and the watch and the car and the club and the whatevers. And yeah, like my kids now, they don't want the white iPod earphones. They want the one with the cord because it's $2, and they're sending a signal
it's
that it's
better for them. Can I just say, we refuse to get our kids the Bluetooth. And yeah, sorry for anybody who's listening to this podcast on their Bluetooth headset right now. I'm not going to shame you on that. But there's a lot more information that is available now. And when we see the kids are, you know, some of them actually paying attention to their health and to their well-being that way.
What my kids are doing is the signal of they don't want to, fashion's not that important to them. Yeah. They want to wear clothes, and they want to spend their money on a vacation. They want to spend, you know, they don't need a car. They'd rather use an Uber or a Lime scooter, and they'd rather go on vacation to Greece. Like, it's like, oh, it's interesting stuff. Like,
it's different. So you created this incredible program called Vivid Vision that John and I did. It's up on Mind Valley right now, which I absolutely, I love everything that Mind Valley is doing and that they're bringing out into the world. Have you, first and foremost, have you done your Vivid Vision with your kids?
I have not. And it's something that I actually had a note when we were on vacation in France to talk to both of them about, was to sit down with them and start architecting their Vivid Vision for their life. So I've got the notes to work with them on. The idea, and I'm glad that you saw it on Mind Valley. I had had, this is another synchronicity moment. I had someone for years, Jason McDonald, emailing me and calling me and texting me and trying to get me to join Mind Valley. And I was like, no, 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 I don't want to do this. And then I kept seeing AFEST and Vision's work. And I was like, no, 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 I don't want to do this. And then somebody sent me a note and they're like, hey, I just read Vision's book, like The Buddha and the Badass, and you're mentioned in it. And he talks about the Vivid Vision. I'm like, oh, I guess I should say thank you to him. And so then he like asked me if I'll speak at one of his events. And I said, sure. And he goes, oh, I'll pay you. I'm like, oh, okay, I guess you can pay me too. And so he pays me. And then he calls me and asks me if I would do a quest for Mind Valley on the Vivid Vision. And I said, sure. And he goes, oh, and I'll pay you. And they paid really well. And I'm like, well, that was out of nowhere. And then he's like, hey, do you want to come to, or I said, by the way, I'm going to be in Estonia this summer. My wife and I are going to be in Estonia. He goes, oh, when are you there? And I said, June, whatever. And he goes, that's right in the middle of Mind Valley University. Do you want to come? And I said, yeah, it'd be great. We're in town. He goes, well, I'll pay you to speak as well. And we'll like I'm saying yes, and he keeps adding the money afterwards. It's supposed to be the opposite way around. So I realizing that you say yes to those opportunities without knowing, as long as they're pointed in the direction that you're going in. So my core purpose is to help entrepreneurs make their dreams happen. Yeah. So what I say yes to is an opportunity to go to an event or speak at a conference or be on a podcast, as long as it's helping entrepreneurial mindset entrepreneurs. So for you, I would have said yes to you because you're a friend, but it was a hell yes because it was also in the entrepreneurial space mindset, you know. But if Vision was a government organization or running an event for accountants or a podcast for lawyers, I would have been no, I don't want to do it. Even for the money, I don't want to do it because it just, it drains me of energy. It's not aligned with my core purpose. And I think the Vivid Vision is part of that. It's where are you going? Can you describe what your future looks like 3 years from now in enough detail that everyone else can see it as well? And then can you put the systems in place to kind of reverse engineer every sentence to help make those sentences come true?
Yeah, I love that. You're just making me think right now, I'm going to be speaking very soon at this one event, and it's actually for female real estate agents, but the whole idea is about health and well-being and, you know, all of these kind of things. And given that I speak a lot to entrepreneurs and business owners and those things as well, as I said, I immediately said yes, without really discussing any type or form of payment. And that's all it, I mean, it's often a little bit awkward after the fact.
Yeah.
And you just helped me to kind of put that to rest in the fact that I actually said yes, even if there was nothing. I said yes because I wanted to be there to serve these women specifically in my city. So making that a better place. And it, again, it's a part of my purpose and it's what I'm here to do. So it's the financial piece will often come, but I think it's the thing that a lot of people don't think about when they step onto the entrepreneurial path or when they're really starting a new business is it's like, it's this idea, I'll say yes to everything and then I'll hope that it turns into something.
Right.
And
that exactly. So you have to say yes with the things that are at least pointed in the direction. It's like the Cheshire Cat said, if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. So if you keep saying yes to all the random things, the synchronicity, it feels right to say yes, because you know, it's pointed with something, right? Well, if you can actually write that down. So I actually in the chat dropped my personal Vivid Vision for what my life looks like. And then I shared the one that my wife and I wrote for what our relationship looks like. And we share those with everybody so that they can help figure out how to make sentences come true. But it helps us to be able to say yes to things and to say no to things, right? It helps me to, and it also helps me to think about where to put some effort and where to put some energy. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah. In my little world, I always say where your attention goes, energy flows.
Yeah,
when you're skiing down the mountain and you're like, don't hit the tree, don't hit the tree. And then you hit the tree. Well, of course, you're going to hit the tree because that's where your attention is. There's a million of other places you could end up, but that's what you're looking at. And so many people
who first said that quote, do you know who is the one that first said where your focus goes, energy flows?
You know, it's probably as far back as the Bhagavad Gita or some sort of ancient Vedic teaching.
Okay. Because I heard it from a guy named Don DePani, who's been around the EO world, and I've got Don DePani coming to speak at my next CEO Alliance event. I've got Don DePani, Chip Connolly, and Warren Rustand all coming to speak at this event. Yeah.
Beautiful. To be a fly on the wall.
Yeah. Cool. This is my, I'm not wearing it. I was wearing a bracelet from Bhutan. We went over to Bhutan this year and did the whole tiger's nest and hiked with and stayed in the monasteries with the monks, and it was incredible.
Okay, so you get to do the coolest things ever. And I don't want to say get to do, you choose to do. You've created a life that allows you to have these experiences.
Yeah.
And, you know, similar to when John and I left and we went to Bali, the amount of people that said to us, like, wow, like you're so lucky that you get to do that. And, you know, we kept saying get to do that. Like, you don't understand, like, the anchors we had to pull up to be able to follow through on a choice that we had.
Your kids were like 12, 9, and 7. You ripped 3 kids out of like primary school and got to go to Bali. That was a huge.
And John sold his business to his partner, right? And I mean, there was a lot of things. And with that as well, I mean, came some serious pain and heartbreak when you step outside of what you've always known and what you've always done. And there was just as much pain as there was pleasure in that whole experience. But looking back, we would do it again in a heartbeat. And we're known as the ones who do the weird, wild things. But it's a part of that vision. And so I guess, Cam, my question for you is, what would you share with people who start doing this vivid vision? And I'm going to really encourage everybody who's listening to, I'm going to put links to your website, links to Mind Valley, links to your vision that you just posted with you and Ashley. But people who create these visions for 3 to 5 years out, but then get paralyzed and stuck on the, where do I begin to take those first steps? What do you usually tell people?
I'm also going to drop you'll hear a video start just because I have ADD but I'm going to drop something else in. It's called Your Vision Statement Sucks. And it's another TEDx talk that I did about the whole vivid vision process that is only about 18 minutes that will give people something. So where most people get stuck is a couple ways. They try to write the vivid vision at their desk using their computer. And that's where we do our work. And that's where we sit in how mode and we sit in planning mode, and you need to dream. So what I recommend you do is get out of your office, get out of your home, leave your technology behind, take a notepad and a pen and go somewhere where you're inspired, somewhere by nature. If you can't get around nature, go to a Ritz-Carlton or a Four Seasons and sit in the lobby by the fireplace and, you know, just allow your mind to drift. That's number one. Number two is to not lean out too far. We're not describing your life 25 years from now. We're describing your life or your business in 3 years, right? So lean out far enough, but not too far. Third would be, you have to be kind of realistic. Like, you know, I don't care who you are. For the most part, you can't sit down and say, I'm going to launch a rocket service to take people to Mars. Like, you're not Elon, you know. Like, I've known Elon for 25 years. His brother worked for me in 1993. You're not, we're not. The guy is like, so, and you're not going to start Google. We're not going to be able to launch Apple tomorrow. So be reasonable with your dreams. It's kind of like within your skill set and within the amount of time you've got, within the amount of money, lean out that far. And then the last one would be to remember that you don't have to be the one to figure out how each part comes true. There's really smart people that can help you figure out each part. And I know you've built a home and done renovations on homes, and anybody who's done that, most of us who've done a renovation or built a home, we're not the contractor. We don't know how to do the electrical. We don't know how to do the plumbing. We don't know how to hang the cabinets. We can describe our kitchen. We can show pictures of what we want it to look like, and we're not going to tell the contractor how to pull electrical cable. Mm-hmm. We focus on the vision of what we want it to look like, and we let them figure out how to make it come true within our budget, within our amount of time, right? Mm-hmm. So just keep focused on where you're going, share it with everyone, and let the who's figure out the how's for you.
I love that. And can I marry that last statement with the other, you know me, the other force that does know, and that you can call it what you want. You can call it universe, you can call it spirit, but this is where I think the synchronicities come in. So when you're super clear about what you want and you begin to make choices based on the yes of alignment, is also notice where the dimes are, and notice where you are recommended a book 3 times and you're like, fine, okay, you know, I'll pick it up and I'll read it.
Yeah. Right? I can tell you one really crazy synchronous moment that you'll appreciate. In the movie, The Secret, and I've never talked about The Secret so much in like the last hours I have, like, because it's from 20 years ago. So 15 years ago, I leave 1-800-GOT-JUNK. I call Brian about a week later and I said, hey, can I come into the office? I'm getting my new Mac. I've just switched from an IBM to a Mac. Can the IT guys help me set this thing up? Because I'm fucking baffled. He goes, yeah, come on in. And he goes, oh, by the way, we have one of the guys from The Secret in the office today. He's going to be speaking to all the employees. You should come and watch him speak. And then I'm going to go for lunch with him and his 2 employees. Why don't the 4 or 5 of us go for lunch together? I said, that'd be great. So this is like a week after Brian has fired me at 1-800-GOT-JUNK. He's invited me to go for lunch with the guy who turns out to be John Assaraf. And John Assaraf is the guy with the vision boards, right? Yeah. So John is the guy all about vision. I sit and watch John speak. I've never met him before. And I come up to him after speaking. I'm like, that was amazing. I loved it. I've had all of our employees watch this. I've watched it a dozen times. And he goes, is your name Cameron? And I said, yeah. And he literally, I got to show you this. He reaches into his pocket and he pulls out a piece of paper like this, like a torn off piece of paper, the corner of an envelope, and written on it is the name Cameron and my phone number. And he goes, I don't know why I'm supposed to call you, but Jason Abernathy from Washington, D.C. heard that I was in Vancouver, told me to call. Their Facebook wasn't even out then. Okay. Like, this is literally pre-Facebook. Yes. Jason heard I was here, told me I should look you up because he said, you're a fascinating guy that I should know. So I'm like, well, I'm going for lunch with you today. He goes, no, I don't care that you're going for lunch. You and I are having breakfast, just the two of us tomorrow. That began a lifelong friendship from John Ashraf and I, because he believed in synchronicity. He's a very strong business guy, you know, already very successful. He had no reason to look up some random guy in Vancouver, but he trusted the gut of somebody telling him to do this. It's fucking weird.
I have chills because these types of things, like this is, I always say, this is shit. Shit I can't make up.
Yeah.
This stuff, it honestly happens all the time. But I also say there's these near misses where, what if you didn't show up that day, right? What if you were sitting in sorry for yourself, but you expanded and said yes to something that you might not have realized, but it was a part of your vision. It was a part of your past. So you say yes.
Or my ego got in the way, or.
Totally. And all of these things start to happen and come together. It's like, trust it.
Here's the golden thread on this one too.
Okay,
at breakfast the next morning, I'm talking to him and I'm like, so what do you mean? He goes, oh, I used to live in Vancouver. I'm like, really? He goes, yeah, I lived in Vancouver. My best friend was Jib. I'm like, Jib, like Jib Street? And he goes, how do you know Jib? I'm like, Jib's brother Spar Street was in my forum, and Spar Street told me about the Celestine prophecy 9 years before. He goes, Spar used to live at my home in San Diego. And I started laughing. I'm like, let me guess, he didn't pay rent? And he goes, yes, and I've got his paintings. Spar owed money to everybody, and the way he paid us all was giving us paintings.
But you know what's amazing is that he's probably some sort of like alien angel in disguise who just goes around and is like sewing up all of these little loose ends.
And Spar's paintings are at Richard Branson's home, Mel Gibson's home, Andre Agassi's home. Spar has done some spectacular art, and we all got paid with his paintings. And this is like, I don't know. This shit's cool.
This shit's cool. It's unbelievable. Oh my God. I love it. I think we could talk about this forever.
Yeah.
Let's figure out a place that John and I and you and Ashley can have many synchronistic moments. Let's not do the IV while still chugging more wine again. That'd be
Sedona.
Great.
We're past that now. We're in Sedona all of February. You guys should come down.
Okay. We have a few things to figure out about getting there. We'll be there. But thank you so much, Cam. This was just absolutely inspiring. I love your approach to the visioning. It's very practical, but it does not leave out the mystical and the magical in creating space for creativity. And then lastly, I think that there's hope in terms of the fact that there's incredible people on the planet right now who are working really hard to creating new systems, because there's a lot of people who feel very lost and very helpless in what is breaking down and what is leaving. Yeah. And they don't necessarily see, because they just simply can't vision. They can't see that there is a future beyond this one. And I think having these conversations ties that together, and it brings people back into hope.
So cool. I'm glad you're doing this. Thank you.
So grateful for you, my love. We'll talk really soon. Okay.
Thank you. Say hi to John for me.
I sure will. Bye.